friends, welcome to the Three Pillars podcast with your host, Griselda Barreto. Aviation. Today's guest is Tim Van Bevera. Tim Van Bevera is a journalist, photographer, cameraman, and filmmaker. He has been involved in the media industry for more than 30 years and has played an important role as author, director, and co-worker in the development of several award-winning film and television productions, including the German Federal Film Award, New York Festivals, International Great Lakes Film Festival, and others. Since the end of the 1980s, he has also reported from crises and war zones like the popular uprising in Nepal in 1989, Kurdistan, and Afghanistan. He accompanied the Nobel Peace Prize laureate and former federal chancellor Willy Brandt at the end of 1990 on his successful humanitarian mission to Iraq in order to reach the release of the Germans and other citizens of dictator Saddam Hussein who were kept in strategic sites as human shields. He reported as a correspondent on behalf of private and public TV providers from the crisis area of the Gulf and later the Balkan conflict in the former Yugoslavia. Van Beveren himself became a direct witness to the conflicts of the modern era. From 1998 to 2005, he lived and worked as a TV and print correspondent in the USA. Since 2008, though, he lives in Berlin. In 1986, Tim Van Bevera was nominated for the Max Ophuls Award and in 1988 for the Federal Film Award for participating in Das Drehbuch. In 1996, he won the gold medal at the New York Festivals for the TV documentary Fear is Included in the Airfare, A Crash and Its Consequences. In 2015, he won a total of 4 international awards for the documentary Unfiltered, Breathe It In, The Truth About Aerotoxic Syndrome. In 2016 and 2017, he was awarded with several honorable mentions by IPA and Monochrome Awards. In 2018, he won the Best Documentary Made by or About Women at a Live Dog International Festival at Los Angeles for Women Composers. In 2019, he won the Best Documentary Feature at the 10th World Music and Independent Film Festival at Washington, D.C. for Women Composers. Conclusion to the Tim Van Bevera podcast interview. And so what were your biggest trials that you faced during the filming of this documentary then?
Well, first of all, it was really very dramatical that Richard Westgate died so unexpected. And on the other hand, this was a great responsibility to deal with this part in an appropriate manner. And on the other hand, you have to make sure that you do not endanger the ongoing legal side of this investigation. So that was some sort of a balance act there. But it took a strange avenue then, which I wasn't used. I worked for WDR for more than 30 years. I went to war areas for them. I basically went for them through the fire. But here something very, very strange happened, because once the documentary project was approved by the chief editors, all of a sudden problems were starting. First, exactly the very same editor who did reject our prior efforts to do such a documentary became now the responsible editor on behalf of WDR for this particular program. And then, to my amazement, rather than clearing the way to produce such a film, he put more and more obstacles and stones in my way. Then something weird happened, that the names of the first intended protagonists were leaked to some airlines, in this case to Lufthansa. And I found out that our computers were not safe, and I was running into a problem with my obligation as a journalist to protect the identity of my sources. So I did set up a secure server based in Switzerland with a 24/7 support of a white hat hacker who was keeping it up and running, and thereby we were communicating with all these people, including the legal team of Westgate, Dr. Mulder, and the forensic team, and the scientists. Yeah, and well, then all of a sudden, my dear WDR editor thought that I should do this film together with a second editor, which is not wrong at all. I had a very good friend in mind who I worked with before and who was on the payroll of NDR, the other station that was in this investigative team there. But WDR rejected him. So they got me a guy on my side who I later learned was, despite that he had a very well-paid fixed job with a public broadcast station. Well, you have to understand that this is like your public officer. Yeah, You cannot be fired. Yeah, and you're very well paid to be independent. Well, and this particular guy, he did receive a petition from the German industry organization to conduct networking studies at a private industry-owned university at Berlin. And interestingly, this private industry university has only 60 students, but 120 mentors who care for them. And among such mentors are, for example, the director of communications of Airbus Defense, the head of the PR department of Lufthansa, head of PR department of BMW, Rolls-Royce, and.
Wow.
And then, strangely, all the protagonists that we had chosen for featuring them in our film, and my colleague was taken care of, such as a former Lufthansa chief stewardess, a former Gulf Air stewardess living in the UK, and others quit, or he decided that we may not feature them out of whatever motives. It was really, really, really strange. And, well, in the end, I traveled once around the world with this guy, not knowing that I had a mole right next to me sitting here. So, The film ended disastrous as far as I see it from my end. And today, when our chief editor, Sonja Mikisch, saw the final edited version a month prior to the projected broadcast date, she wasn't that happy at all. I felt that was because it was somehow a soft wash of very solid facts that we obtained during our research. Mm. And the film lacked its investigative assets and the highlights and was very indifferent in its message. So I wasn't happy either. So I suggested that I will do a re-edited version on my own editing system and without any costs for the station, because we already went over budget, and put that new edited version then up for discussion. And that was fine. We had a month to go. We had no pressing date to meet. But that was declined by Mr. Angerer and our dear editor in charge on behalf of WDR. And of course, I had committed myself to our other protagonists. And among them, for example, was a young flight attendant from Berlin who became partially paralyzed after a severe fume event aboard a Condor Boeing 757 in Las Palmas in March 2013. And as there were still ongoing talks about a peaceful termination of her working contract with Condor, because, of course, she became permanently unfit to fly, I agreed to discuss all the interview passages of her appearance in the film with her attorney prior to the broadcast. So then, all of a sudden, I was informed by WDR that I should not do the last changes on my film and that Mr. Angerer would do this himself. And despite my protest, as this is a very unusual step, and I did never, ever experience something like that in with WDR in the 30 years that I worked for the station, this was a fact. So all of a sudden, the attorney of this flight attendant was asking me for the parts to be used of his client and which parts and what. And I could not say anything as I didn't know which parts Mr. Angerer intended to keep and which ones he would cut out. And on the other hand, also the attorney representing the Westgate case, Frank Cannon, had to clear the part related to the Westgate investigation, as here in this very particular case, this was subject to an ongoing coroner investigation and a subsequent court case under British law. So this is quite tricky, because if the film would have been aired before the publication of a scientific study or before the coroner had opened the case officially by setting a date for a hearing, this could be regarded as contempt of court, which is punishable in the UK. So then the lawyers couldn't get an answer from me, so they asked WDR, because I couldn't answer their questions, and they got two different answers. One lawyer was told that I'm no longer the editor of the film, and the other was told that I'm the editor of the film, but WDR does not see any obligation to stick to what these gentlemen and I have agreed on. So presumably WDR's legal department thought that these lawyers do not talk to each other, but of course they did, as they were working on similar subjects. So this thing blew straight into the face of the station, with the result that both protagonists withdrew their consent for the broadcast. So, and then a week prior to the scheduled broadcast, all of a sudden, I received an email, not from WDR, my employer for more than 30 years, but from, well, guess who? Lufthansa's PR department. And they were telling me, dear Mr. Van Beveren, we learned from WDR that you're no longer the editor of the intended broadcast of your cabin air subject. Okay, so I learned from Lufthansa's PR department, not from my station, that I'm no longer the editor. And that was the point in time I got my lawyers involved. And ever since, we are talking exclusively via them. And the trial is finally set for, I believe, this autumn, something like that. So the film then was broadcasted. My name was erased. And it was only a film by my fixed employed colleague. And to my understanding and my taste, it was a very, very poor, bad film that was aired there. Sometime in the middle of the football championship and in the middle of the night when nobody was watching, of course. Mm-hmm. But there was one problem. I had given my word to some very brave people that I will make their cases heard in public and that I will uncover the issue and I will bring it to the public. Yeah. Well, one problem. The problem is that I had given my word to some people, and some of them very brave people, because they provided us with inside information, they're risking their job, that I will make their cases heard in the public and I will uncover the issue and I will bring it to the public's attention. And the problem with me is that I keep my word. So I decided then, excuse my French, WDR, do my own version. And as I owned roughly 80% of the footage, because I shot it personally with my camera, and WDR did not even compensate me for that, despite that they told me that they're going to compensate me for that. It was somehow very easy. So I amended the footage that was owned by WDR exclusively, and a year later, the film Unfiltered Breathed In had its premiere in Berlin. And then the film received, yeah, you mentioned it, 4 international awards, and is so far considered as one of the best films existing at the moment, covering the story from the past until today.
True. And it's an amazing film. I mean, I just wanted to ask you, hearing this entire story is, shocking. I mean, I can't imagine what all you were going through while you were making this documentary. But what gave you the courage to pull through? Were there times where you said, I just want to, yeah, I know you're a man of your word and things, but were there times where you were completely frustrated that you wanted to give up? And what helped you push through?
Well, yeah, there were times that I was very frustrated, and more than once I was given up. I invested my entire pension insurance into the finishing of this film. No, but on the other hand, I believe I owe this to these people that I met since 2008 and who are suffering and who are not in the position that they can defend themselves. And so it's probably a problem from my education and from my dear father, who always told us, to my brother, my sister and me, that we are privileged. He's paying for our education. He's putting us to good schools. But we have the obligation that we have to help people who are not that privileged. And that's somehow very deep inside me. So that was basically one of the motives. And yes, I met many, 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 many people who really need help and need the story to be out. Otherwise, they are lost.
Amazing. So it's actually your humaneness that brought out your conviction to finish this documentary, which is amazing. So well done. And I know that this this film has inspired, or has actually informed me as well. It informed me on the actual basics of erotoxic syndrome and the whole cover-up involved with it, you know, and what the victims go through and how they are suffering. And so it's a inspiring documentary, very heart-touching. So well done. And then you won the award. So that's like amazing, you know.
Yeah, well, awards. Financially, it's a disaster, but that's it. I'm very pleased that we finished it. I had unfinished work.
So what have the reactions been of the industry towards your work?
Well, you don't make many friends on this side when you start digging in such obscure issues, and if you start asking questions. On the other hand, this is exactly what journalists are supposed to do, ask questions. So you may not always like what they ask, but nevertheless, I think the industry is not very pleased with my work. They refuse to answer questions or come up with phony stories trying to pull dirt on you. Fine, but this is what I'm used to being an investigative journalist and having worked in this field for 20 years. So this is not shocking me at all. Let's see where they end up in the end.
But have you ever felt threatened during this entire, you know, this entire period?
What do you mean by threatened? If you have bugs taken out of your apartment, you consider that a threat? Yes, that happened. But physically, no. They do it different. They play it differently. They're using their networks. You don't get jobs. Well, they even write you nice emails. Like I got an email here from the head of the German Aviation Lobby Group. He said, well, Mr. Van Beveren, why are you always putting this dirty up here on our famous great airlines and Lufthansa? You should try to look into other things, like, for example, the new engines that we are using, and you would see some jobs coming along your way. This is usually how it works, but yeah, you can't buy me. And as I said, I'm not good as a suppository.
Okay. Probably a stupid question. Is there going to be a sequel?
Let's see. Maybe.
Oh, you said maybe. Oh, cool. So maybe I could come back to you in a couple of months to hear about your plans.
Well, I have in mind to work on a book, a novel, rather than on a factual book. In a novel, you have more freedom and even to point to people. Well, you can always write this nice sentence there. It's there's no connection to living or dead persons.
I wrote a book also in the form of it's a true story, but I wrote it in the form of a fiction story, so that you don't go back to the actual victim, but the story is out there, which is, you know, you want the story of erotoxic syndrome to get out there, but not involve the people, because then, you know, the industry and whoever else can actually attack the victim. So that's a good way of doing it. So I'm looking forward to this book of yours then.
Yeah, well, maybe in a year or so, I'm done with it.
Great. Mm-hmm. And so tell me something, what are your thoughts and feelings on this sickness, on erotoxic syndrome?
Well, a long overdue to be resolved problem. I think it's a shame for the industry, which is proudly telling you that they are the best, that they take care for their employees, and that they're, and of course, they take care for their biggest value, which is the paying customer. So you and me as passengers, and actually they're not. And it's a disgrace. And I think it's time that, well, maybe prosecutors start to look into this issue.
And has it had an impact on your life personally?
Well, definitely. As I said, I used up my pension insurance to finish a film.
Yeah.
I'm still involved in an ongoing litigation with my former employer for more than 30 years, WDR. They do not hire me again, and they do everything that I do not get hired by any other of their sister stations either. So these were pretty rough times I went through.
And you're still fighting, actually, isn't it?
See, I studied law, and I take this from the sport. Well, say it differently. I'm not shy in taking up a fight if somebody wants to fight with me. Yeah, I'm not trying to ease my way out if the opponent is somebody I can tackle and I can cope with. And here, this opponent I can cope with because they are wrong and they are doing the wrong thing and they're lying. And as long as I stand up and I can still watch my face in the mirror every morning, it's fine.
Okay. So what would your advice be to the aviation industry, to regulators, politicians?
Fix the problem. ASAP. Really, the industry should do it. It's long, long time overdue. Well, let's say silently, they have started to do it. Yeah, for example, you can buy the Airbus A320neo with a non-bleed system. it's available. Nobody buys it because it's not mandatory. That's the other problem. So there is the point where the regulators should step in. And if the regulators don't step in, it's the politicians who have to step in. But I don't know. Well, politicians probably live from the money that the industry is paying for their campaigning. That's the miraculous circle here. But definitely it should be fixed as soon as possible.
Yeah. And what would your advice be then to the crew, the passengers, and people in general?
Well, to crew specifically, report it, write official reports, create paper, get copies of these reports. Also, and I know this is not very prudent in this job, leak it to the media, leak these events to them, make these reports available to them so that the media gets involved. Well, and the other thing, well, just a couple of months ago, I got a call here on my cell phone of a good friend of mine who is a pilot. And he said, we were just coming into Tegel and we had a fume event. What shall we do here? And I went to the hotel to see the entire crew. They all got something. The co-pilot was definitely in a very bad shape. And I told them, go to see a doctor. Immediately get your blood drawn, build up a file with the evidence. Apparently nobody did. And this is where the problem is. Many think, well, if it doesn't knock me out immediately, I'm lucky and I continue. But this is not the case. It may be that it doesn't knock you out immediately, but it will definitely come back to you, maybe in some month, some years, or some decades. And then you have a problem if you cannot prove your case and you have no evidence. And this requires you have to get the aircraft logbook, well, at least the registration. You should report it so to the authorities that it is on the file, because then only later you can make up your own claim. And even if legislation is going to change, or there will be a change somehow in this system, you still need this evidence to prove then that you got affected. I see some change here with some very brave people in France. And you see that not only Mr. Macron has his problems with the Yellow Vests, also apparently with some pilots who, rather than filing a civil suit, they filed a criminal complaint against EasyJet and Air France. And now the prosecutors are looking into it. And that could be really a change. Yeah, and I think this is the right way. We are in Germany. Nobody ever dared to file a criminal case because of that. Not crew, not passengers. Despite that, we have people who died. We have dead pilots. We have heavily affected flight crew, but nobody files a complaint.
That's the shocking thing, actually. You know, we like Germany, France. We all are part of Europe. We're supposedly supposed to be together, but each state has its own ruling and its own conditions.
Yeah, well, this is what they use. This is exactly what the other side uses. They outplay them. They try to, well, it would be great if those people who are affected, yeah, would really unite, because this is what is always underestimated, the power of people pulling together on one side of the rope. You can really make a change, but this requires that you all stick your heads together and you forget about personal problems that you may have with one or the other. And this is not done. Yeah, we have single people up front, yeah, fighting for something, and the others hide behind it and are somehow afraid of getting into the first row. And this is not going to help.
Yeah, and no, the thing is, you know, like pilots especially, the job is so specific that they don't want to lose their job. So even if they are feeling sick, as you know, they would not report it. They want to continue flying to be able to earn that money, to be able to pay their bills and mortgages and everything else. Similarly for cabin crew. So they need to, you know, go ahead.
Even worse, if I'm looking at the pace of a cabin crew rather than to pilots. Pilots are a little bit better off. But there's one difference. Pilots can sometimes afford a private health insurance, and thereby they are covered. What I've seen in the past is that there have been settlements between airlines and pilots. Of course, nothing goes to the public and nobody can talk about it, but money has changed sides here. this is done. And this is what the industry is trying. They're buying out people. And this is what some people also expect. But, well, I know here in Germany, an airline is offering 50,000 euros for a flight attendant. That's the price for a flight attendant who claims that he's unfit to fly because of fume events. And some people take this 50,000 and go. Okay, if you're 24, 25, 26, that sounds like a lot of money. But when you are getting older and you get problems with your nervous system and you cannot do any other job because you cannot concentrate for more than 2 hours or something like that, you're done. Yeah. And then 50,000 is nothing. So this is what most people don't think about.
True. Tell me something, Tim, you have your private flying license. Do you still fly?
Well, flying has a really bad, bad impact on our environment, as we all should know by now. And so I'm trying to avoid to fly whenever I can. Yeah, sometimes I'm going out with some friends, take a small plane, fly somewhere for fun. But I'm cutting that really much down. Also, travel. And, well, the one thing is I was in New York 2 weeks ago, and I was looking at different websites to find out who flies with a Boeing 787. And I found United going from Frankfurt to Newark. So I flew United from Frankfurt to Newark with a Boeing 787 and return. And because it has a non-bleed system and the air is really much, much better, and you won't run into these problems that we are facing in the other airplanes.
But you were lucky there, because not all companies have that aircraft.
No, but United has opened a route here. And I hope that we will see more and more airlines flying in with the 787s, because that's the right way. And that was a good move by Boeing. They never admitted that it's due to the problem with the cabin air, but it has eliminated the problem. So they have other problems. But that problem was thereby terminated. And hey, have you flown in one, in a 787?
No, actually, I haven't, but I have heard that the air is much cleaner.
It's much better, and I spoke to cabin crew working there, and they say it's much better working there because they are not so fatigued, as the cabin altitude is on a much lower level than normal airplanes. Yeah, you have much more oxygen there, and that has some effect even on your work, especially with the heavy trolleys and all that kind of stuff. So,
You felt a difference as a passenger.
Yeah, definitely. When we were doing the film for WDR, we flew around the world and I did the schedules. We wanted to fly most different type of airplanes so that we can compare the data, because we have also taken our blood before and after each flight and have analyzed it. And we measured the air on board. And we flew from, the first leg was from Frankfurt via Delhi to Sydney on Air India 787. That was the most relaxing flight. After 18 hours being on board of an airplane, that was the first time after such a long, long, long range flight that I went out of the aircraft and I was ready to work. Yeah.
So you normally weren't jet lagged? Totally
no, nothing. Not at all. Not at all. It was very, very nice. And well, then from Sydney to Los Angeles, we flew on an Airbus A380, and I had 3 days that I was sick. It was the Qantas Airbus, which lost an engine, by the way. And we had high measures of tributyl phosphate, not TCP, but TBP, which points to the direction that hydraulic fluid is leaking into the air system there in this aircraft.
We keep speaking about TCPs, and now you say that you actually had TBPs. Wow.
TBP, yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. Were you affected by aerotoxic syndrome as well?
Well, according to the DNA test that is available, I belong to the group of the good metabolizers. So luckily, I'm not involved and I'm not affected. I recall a couple of fume events that I've experienced as a passenger flying a lot in the past, especially when I was working as a correspondent in the US. I was frequently flying between Europe and the US, and I had two fume events on Lufthansa A340s, which those days I thought, jet lag or something like that, and I recovered after a few days. But no, I'm supposedly I'm lucky. I can metabolize the stuff and it left my body as soon as it gets in.
All right. Okay. So, Tim, how do you see the future?
Short term, nothing will change. They will keep on their strategy of denial. Meanwhile, there is some change. Filters have been tested. They have been introduced. But you may buy certain aircraft versions bleed-free, like the 787. Yeah, you could buy an Airbus A320neo, but nobody does it because it's not mandatory. So I think that the industry secretly has introduced a change. Well, looking long term, I think that future aircraft will hopefully very soon start to fly electric, and thereby we have hopefully eliminated the problem at all.
But when you say future, that's quite long term, isn't it?
Well, they're experimenting on that. It's I think that's the way that they can go, and let's see what else they find. They have the ingredients there. It's just a change which should start tomorrow. Yeah, if all manufacturers could start tomorrow to build aircraft which are bleed free, then we still have the problem with the old fleet, and airplanes are flying more than 10, 20, or 30 years, so we will still have these flying around with the problems. But again, their filters can be installed, alarm systems can be installed. Well, the pilots could be notified that something like that is happening, at least. And they could, for example, shut down the bleed valve to the affected engine. Yeah, that would also help, minimizing the point. Well, this is coming back from where I'm coming from in aviation, is we have to eliminate threats and dangerous situations in order to keep aviation safe. And this is what it should be.
Yeah, but I think it goes back to training, and our pilots even trained, because the industry doesn't even accept the fact that there is a problem with aerotoxic syndrome, with bleed air or anything. So I don't think pilots are actually seeing bleed air as toxic or whatever, so far at least.
Well, I know many pilots who see that because they are affected and they tell others. Yeah, there are some who are really reluctant, and they have this attitude, as long as I'm not affected, what should I care? Yeah, fine. Okay. I think there the regulators are required. And again, as I said, when the regulators don't do their job, then it's up to the politicians. And the politicians, in the end, are elected by us, the people. So let's see where it starts.
Yeah. Good advice there. Yeah. Okay. So, Tim, tell me, what is your current WIP, your current work in progress? What can we look forward to from you in the near future?
Nothing which has to do with aviation.
Oh, nothing. Right. So which direction are you going in this time?
Last year I finished a film about women composers, as I found out that there are very, very, very good pieces of classical music composed by women in the 18th, 19th, and early 20th century, but they are never played in concert halls. That's because we have a male-dominated environment there. Now, everybody knows Mozart and Beethoven and Haydn, and that's what the people want to hear, and that's what everybody plays. But there are great, 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 great works created by women, and they had many, many problems to do that. And so I did a documentary last year, which was still shown in German movie theaters right now. November, it will be released as a DVD, and next year, early next year, as video on demand as well. And now we are working on a second part of that, where we have even more women composers. One who is from the same time as Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and she was as well the first conductor ever heard of. And another one is Ethel Smyth, for example. She was among the suffragettes in Britain, and she even composed the March of the Women, the hymn for the suffragettes.
Yeah.
So we have her, and that's pretty interesting, because it is a nice story and has to do with great women and no dirty games, despite male chauvinism and patriarchal situations. But that can be taken care of. And it's a story also about gender and language, and it's nice music, and I like it very much.
Yeah, amazing. Because you always choose these, topics that are different, that you rarely see, other people working with, like Aerotoxic, like now this, what you're working on right now. It's amazing. So I think you challenge yourself with these, right? To bring up something that hasn't been spoken about before.
I'm curious, you know?
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
Would you like to share any other important information with our listeners, Tim?
Well, there's so much. I don't know what to say. Guys, keep yourself informed.
Be curious.
Be curious, yes. And ask questions. Never give up asking questions. That's the most important thing. And work together on a change. And it's possible. It can be done.
True that. And how and where can the listeners view your film, Unfiltered, Breathed In? You mentioned it before, but just very quickly.
Well, it's very easy. It's on Vimeo. Yeah. Vimeo.com. So it's vimeo.com/on-demand/unfiltered-breathed-in. That's the English version. Or, pour parle français, c'est vimeo.com on demand le syndrome aerotoxique. Mm-hmm. And the German version is on vimeo.com/on-demand/ungefiltered. But I send you these links and people can go there and they can either buy the film or they can watch it one time, or there are a couple of options. But okay, it's good. Available in English, French and German, and probably soon in Spanish.
Wow, amazing. So that's really European.
Well, consider that more people speak Spanish in the world than English.
True. Agreed. Okay, and how can the listeners contact you?
Well, very easy, about via my webpage, which is my initials, TVB. That's what people call me, TVB, Tango Victor Bravo. TVBmedia.de. So all together, TVBmedia.de, Delta Echo, or for the aviators, it's Tango Victor Bravo Mike Echo Delta India Alpha dot Delta Echo.
So you still have your aviation language.
Oh, you never forget that.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. So, Tim, it has been an amazing, should I say TVB? Because I've been calling you Tim, but you say that everyone calls you TVB.
Well, yeah, many.
Okay, Tim/TVB. Thank you so much for being on the show. It has been really informative, eye-opening, amazing to have you on the show. I hope I can invite you back, in the future somewhere, so that you can update us on, things that you've been working on, or if you've got more information. And actually, what happened to your court case that's supposed to be, you said in November this year?
No, it's October, late October, end of October.
Yeah, to see what happens, the result of the hearing and things. So if you agree, I'd like to have you on at a later date if you're not too busy. And thank you so much, Tim, for coming on.
No problem. And whenever you come to Berlin, give me a call and we have a nice coffee or a good glass of wine.
We will definitely. Thanks, Tim, for the invitation. Have a lovely evening then.
You too.
And see you soon.
Take care and happy landings.
Oh, thank you. Bye, Tim. See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining The Three Pillars. Please subscribe at griselda.blog to win a free protective mask. See you next week.